The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to A Sharp Outlook, best practices for success with host Angela Sharp. Today's program features expert guests, industry insights, and the experience of your host, all coming together to help you take control of your company and move your business to the next level. Now, here's your host, Angela Sharp.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to A Sharp Outlook. Do you need a helping hand with your business? Do you need a way of expanding your business? Well, today we're going to talk about how you can get a helping hand through government contracting. What is 8A Business Development Program? It is a hand up. It is a helping hand, and it is a great opportunity for small business. The 8A Development Program is a business assistance program for small, disadvantaged businesses and offers a broad scope of assistance to firms that are owned and controlled at least 51% by socially and economically disadvantaged individuals. So we want to provide this information to you, and what we want to find out is, how can I determine if I qualify? Well, those are some answers we're going to be able to provide to you on today's show. And my guest today is Daryl Harrison from the Small Business Administration. And Daryl K. Harrison was appointed Associate Administrator for Business Development in August of 2010. In this position, Mr. Harrison is responsible for the management of the SBA's 8A Business Development Program. The 8A Business Development Program is an essential instrument for helping socially and economically disadvantaged entrepreneurs gain access to the economic mainstream of American society. Prior to this appointment, Mr. Harrison served in a number of senior management positions, including the Associate Administrator for Management and Administration, Acting Administrator, Deputy Associate Administrator for Management and Administration, Assistant Administrator for Administration and Senior Procurement Executive, Deputy Associate Deputy Administrator for Government Contracting and Business Development, District Director of SBA's Washington, D.C. District Office, and Deputy Associate Administrator for Investment and Director, Division of Program Certification and Eligibility. He started his career with SBA in 1978 in Charleston, West Virginia branch office as a business management specialist. From there, he held various positions in SBA branch district and headquarter offices. Prior to joining SBA, Harrison served as a budget and marketing director for the transportation division in the Governor's Office of Economic and Community Development for the state of West Virginia. He is a native of Institute, West Virginia, and holds an MBA from Marshall University and a bachelor's degree in business administration from West Virginia State University. I'd like to welcome Daryl Harrison to our show. Thank you, Daryl.
Well, good morning, and thank you. I'm pleased to have the opportunity to be with you this morning.
Well, it's great to have you here to be able to give some information to our listeners and some guidance on how they can actually get a helping hand through government contracting. So what is your role with the SBA?
Well, as you mentioned in that very lengthy bio, and I am currently the Associate Administrator for the Office of Business Development, which is located within SBA's Office of Government Contracting and Business Development. And in that role, I'm responsible for the management of the 8A Business Development Program on a national basis.
And what exactly, you know, I know how the government is, and there's a lot of acronyms and a lot of, you know, short terminology. So tell us exactly, what is the 8A Business Development Program?
Well, as you mentioned earlier, the 8A Business Development Program was a program that was legislated with the intent of providing the necessary resources to companies owned by individuals who are identified as being socially and economically disadvantaged to enable those individuals to develop profitable, successful, sustainable businesses, and with a recognition that what had precluded those individuals in the past from doing so were the lack of access to the necessary resources. And so the intent of this program is to bring those resources to the forefront to enable those firms to have the opportunity to be successful and to compete in the marketplace on a level playing field.
So that particular program is actually those that are considered economically disadvantaged, they can go there and are the programs set aside so that they get specific opportunities that are not maybe available to the open public?
Well, that is an opportunity within the program. And a lot of, this program is misconstrued to be a contracting program, but in fact it was not intended to be a contracting program. It was intended to be, as I mentioned, a business development program. Access to federal contracts was one of the tools that was made available through the legislation to enable these firms to develop the necessary past performance and skills to be successful in both the government and commercial marketplace. And individuals who own companies that are determined to be eligible have the opportunity to have access to federal contracts for business development purposes on a sole source basis, as well as a restricted competition basis. And when I say restricted competition, these are competitions that are limited to 8A program participants.
Okay. So then how does a business get certified as an 8A organization so they can participate in this?
Well, the process is an application process. The application, access to the application is available online. It's an automated application. And as you mentioned earlier, we briefly talked a little bit about the eligibility criteria. So obviously the program is geared for small businesses. And those small businesses that are owned by individuals who are socially and economically disadvantaged, then it must be at least 51%, we use the terminology, unconditionally owned, which means that there can't be conditions around any ownership associated with the applicant firm. Now, under the law and under our rules, a socially disadvantaged individual is identified as an individual who has because of circumstances beyond their control, been denied access to the economic mainstream, so to speak. And under the law, individuals who are members of certain racial or ethnic groups are presumptively socially disadvantaged. And those groups include Black Americans, Hispanic Americans, Native Americans, Asian Pacific Americans, subcontinent Asian Americans, as well as some entity-owned organizations. Those would be companies that are owned by Alaska Native corporations, Native Hawaiian organizations, as well as Indian tribes. Now, companies that are owned by those individuals or entities are presumptively socially disadvantaged. That doesn't mean that other individuals don't have the opportunity to prove that they are socially disadvantaged as well. And what we require in that case is that the burden of proof is on the applicant individual to prove that he or she has suffered social disadvantage, oppressive practices that have precluded their entry or advancement in the market in the business world. We use a legal standard, preponderance of the evidence, to determine their eligibility. Now, out of that group, with the exception of companies owned by Alaska Native corporations, no one is presumptively economically disadvantaged. And we have standards that we apply to determine economic disadvantage. We look at, as far as the individuals are concerned, we look at their personal net worth. We have a requirement that says that their personal net worth, excluding the equity in their personal residence, the equity in the business, any eligible retirement plan that they can't access without significant penalties will be excluded from the calculation of the net worth. After that calculation, if their personal net worth is under $250,000, then we would consider them economically disadvantaged. But it's a two-pronged test. We also look at the company and how well the company is positioned in respect to like or similar firms that are owned by individuals who are not socially or economically disadvantaged. And we use financial comparisons to determine whether or not those companies demonstrate unequal access to capital and resources that, that would be necessary to support the growth and development of that company. We look at personal income. We look at an average of personal income, and if your income is, if on average is over $250,000, we would not consider you to be economically disadvantaged. And then we have a total asset test that we apply, which is a $4 million threshold. So that's basically what we look at in terms of social and economic disadvantage. We look to see that those, like I mentioned, that those individuals actually own unconditionally at least 51% of the company, whether that be in a typical corporation stock or if it's a partnership or some other legal form of, you know, of an entity. We look to determine the appropriate level of ownership. But we also look at the issue of control. And when we look at control, we look at a lot of different things. And we're looking at the individual who is applying, the individual upon whom eligibility is based, their ability based on their background and skills to actually run the company, or whether there's an obvious dependency on someone who would be considered non-disadvantaged to run that company. We look at relationships with other companies and organizations. So there are a number of things we look at in respect to control. Company must be small. That's an obvious one. It's a small business program. The companies must meet SBA small business size standards for the industries that they are applying in. The individuals must be of good character. We look at business integrity issues. I'm probably forgetting something, but that's the gist of the areas that we one of the big areas that we look at that I failed to mention is we look at what we refer to as potential for success, and we look at the company's resume. We look at the individual's resume. We look at the company's past performance to determine whether or not, if they were brought into the program, that at that point that they would have an opportunity to be successful in the program. And we generally have a rule around that that says that a firm must be in business for at least 2 years. And when we say in business for 2 years, what we mean is that you're able to provide tax returns that prove that you've generated revenues in that company for the preceding 2 years in the industry under which you are applying for participation in the program. Now, we do have exception to that. If you haven't been in business for 2 years, we will look at an exception. But we look at your ability to have access to the resources that you need to be successful. We look at your management and technical background in the industry, and we look at the financial capability of the company, and we look at the past performance of the company. So, you know, if you haven't been in business for 2 years, that doesn't necessarily preclude you from applying, but it does mean that we apply a more strenuous test to determine that you can be successful in the program at that time.
It seems that the program has expanded far more than it was when I first was initially introduced to 8A program. It seemed to have been more minority-driven, but it seems like it has, you know, kind of expanded looking at, like I said, socioeconomic disadvantages also. How long does it take to get certified? Once you fill out the application process, can be long.
The application process is a tough process, and I'd be the first to admit that. There's a lot of due diligence that's undertaken in respect to the review of the application. The application itself is not that onerous. It's not difficult. What can be onerous is the supporting documentation that's required, in addition to the forms that SBA requires you to fill out. We look at all your corporate or otherwise documents, your operating agreements. We look at any other agreements you might have. We look at documents to validate the claims you make in respect to your financial well-being of you as an individual as well as the company. And we're reviewing all the financial statements and any other information that might be required based on the basic information that we collect. So an application can be difficult to put together, particularly in respect to a lot of the supporting documentation. And a lot of times, obviously, you submit something and that may raise a question that will provoke us to ask you for more information, to explain that. So that part of the process can be a little bit intimidating. We recognize that, and we try to be as helpful as we can in that process. Generally, under the law, we're supposed to process initial applications within 90 days. Now, when we look at the 90 days, first of all, we will not accept and process what we consider to be a materially incomplete application.
Mm-hmm.
So if you submit an application and we screen it, we generally screen applications within 15 days of receiving them, and we get back to you to let you know what's deficient, what's missing, what's required. We will not accept that application until we deem it to be complete. So once we accept it, that 90-day clock starts.
Okay.
And so that in and of itself can add time to the application process itself. If a lot of times our applications come in, they can go right through, depending on the complexity of the application itself. Generally, more complex applications may require a size determination, or they may require a legal review, or there may be some other part of SBA that needs to become a reviewer in that process. Those applications tend to take longer to get out.
Mm-hmm.
So generally, applications get processed within that 90-day time frame, and if not, generally within 120 days or so. Now, if you get declined originally, and that happens frequently, you do have an opportunity to request that decision be reconsidered. And a good thing about that process is that it allows you to address those issues that we raise in the decline letter. So that means that you can come back and you can provide additional information. You can change circumstances. You know, whatever it is you believe will address the concerns that we raised in the decline letter.
Well, that's one of the things that what you just stated about it being complete. That's something that I try to tell my listeners. I've always maintained that with my clients or anyone that I work with or companies I work with. So we're going to go to break now, and we'll come back with even more information.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Do you want to know what's really going on these days? Well, Capital Thinking takes you inside the worlds of policy, politics, law, and business. What happens in Washington, on Wall Street, and in our nation's legal system impacts your business every day. We're taking you on a behind-the-scenes tour of all of it. Each week, we bring you unfiltered conversation with a variety of influential policymakers, lawyers, and business leaders. I'm Kevin O'Neill, and I'm your host as Capital Thinking tours the halls of power. Join me for Capital Thinking on the Voice America Business Network each Thursday at noon Eastern and 9 a.m. Pacific Time.
The way we do banking today continues to evolve. No longer is it just brick and mortar locations or traditional bankers' hours. Today, banking is 24/7. It's in the home. It's on the go. It's digital. Tune in to Breaking Banks with Brett King for a look at how traditional banking as we know it has changed due to a loss of trust, changing economic conditions and consumer behavior, government involvement, and, of course, technology. What does it all mean? Listen every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific, on the Voice America Business Channel.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to A Sharp Outlook. To reach Angela Sharp or today's guest, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You may also send email to asharpeoutlook@gmail.com or tweet the program at asharpcons. Now, back to the program.
Well, welcome back. And as we, before the break, we were talking about the certification process and the application. And one of the things I wanted to ask is, do you recommend that a firm pay a representative to submit an application?
Now, that's a interesting question, and it's a personal choice. My recommendation is that, you know, it if you feel that you have a need to have someone who may have some experience working with applications and applicants and the program itself help you, I don't necessarily see anything wrong with that. I'm certainly not advocating that you do that. But one thing I would advocate is that if you decide to go through that process, it behooves you to work on the application yourself as well, because what you'll learn is that this whole process is truly a learning process, and going through that application many times will make you realize things about your company that you did not necessarily know, because a lot of times when we start businesses, we depend a lot on outside help to actually start that business. So we have things in place that we don't necessarily know what they mean or what they actually say. We just know that it's something that's considered necessary or pro forma for actually starting a business. And that in itself a lot of times is a downfall in respect to our determination of eligibility on an application. I'll give you a perfect example. Just a typical corporation, you will have an article of incorporation and a set of bylaws. And in that set of bylaws, it will essentially say how you operate your company, how you establish a quorum, how you make decisions in terms of voting in respect to stock and board meetings, and a number of different things in that respect, and what rights you have and don't have in the organization. And a lot of times they are boilerplate and don't necessarily truly represent how you say you operate your company. And a lot of times those provisions run afoul of our rules and regulations regarding control. And a lot of our applicants don't even know what those documents say. So, you know, a lot of times you take the opportunity to sit down. It's a good exercise for you. It's a good planning exercise for you. You get to know more about your own company, and to have someone who can look over your shoulder and look at the documents and say, well, you should probably submit this as well, is not a bad idea. And one of the things I advise people to do all the time is when you put that package together, actually sit down and read it, see what it says and what you're sending to SBA. And if it raises questions, more than likely when we look at it, it's going to raise that same question with us. And you should just go and take the opportunity to answer that question, clarify that issue.
One of the things I wanted to ask, that once you're certified in the program, tell us about the business development assistance that is provided.
We provide business development assistance through a number of mechanisms. We have in every state in the United States, there is at least one SBA office. And once a firm is approved for participation in the program, that firm is assigned to the district office, SBA district office, that's responsible for providing SBA services within that geographic area. The individuals who work in that office will help with business planning processes, will give advice, but they will also rely on a lot of SBA resource partners. You may have heard of the small business developments,
mm-hmm.
sort of women business ownership centers, or the veteran business centers, the Service Corps retired executives. There are a number of resource partners that we rely on for various types of assistance, which in addition, we have under the program a program which we refer to as the 7J Management and Technical Assistance Program. Now, I won't get into the technicalities of that, but Section 7J is a section in the Small Business Act that allows us to provide business development assistance to participants in the 8A program through professional consulting organizations. And annually, we put vehicles in place with professional consulting organizations to provide specialized assistance to 8A firms. And that assistance, either through the resource partners or through our consulting services, can range from business planning, financial management, industry-related certifications, help with preparing for that, helping to become familiar with the federal market and federal contracting vehicles, marketing support, helping with learning how to prepare bids and proposals, and mentoring. One of the beautiful opportunities is the ability to have the assistance of a mentor. It could be a former 8A participant. It could be a large business. It could be another small business. So there are a number of resources that are available that can be tapped for companies coming into the program.
How long is this program? Once they are actually accepted into the program and they're getting all this assistance, how long is this program?
The program is a 9-year program, and it's divided into two stages. The first 4 years of the program are considered the developmental years in the program, and during those years, we really try to go heavy with the business development assistance, and we don't have a lot of limits on the contracting opportunities. So your opportunity to obtain sole source contracts or competitive 8A contracts is sort of unlimited in that respect. The next 5 years are considered transitional stage years, and during those years, the purpose is to continue to provide business development assistance, but it takes on a different flavor. I mean, we're looking to help you with strategies to exit the program, and we're also looking for you to start backing off of the level of 8A support that you need, with more dependency on revenues that you're generating competitively, either via government or commercial sources.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking to wean you off the program during those last 4 years, but to continue to help you to move forward to exit the program successfully.
What are some of the lessons that you have learned that you can share with our listeners today regarding the 8A program and just common mistakes of business in relationship to the program?
Yeah, I mentioned some earlier, and particularly in respect to applying for the program, making certain that that your documentation is complete, that you've given us all of the information that is pertinent to certain issues that you may recognize in your application yourself. Being responsive when we ask for information. I don't take offense when we ask for information. Our purpose is to try to assist you in being eligible for the program. So when we ask for information, we're basically trying to have a complete picture before we make a final decision. And we understand that part gets a little bit aggravating. One of the things that I think is really important is to make sure that you're really, really ready to come into the 8A program. As I mentioned earlier, the program's a 9-year program, and that clock starts ticking the day you are approved to participate in the program. So to the extent possible, you want to hit the ground running. And I think what you need to keep in mind, particularly if you have little to no federal contracting experience, is that the federal acquisition world is really, really challenging, very complex. A lot of rules, acquisition packets are extremely long and complex. And the government, the way the government operates, if you're really not familiar with the way the government operates, it's really difficult for you to get started in the government and be successful. And there's a lot of emphasis on past performance. So I encourage everyone to make sure that when you make that decision that you're really, really ready to get into government. You understand how the government works. You understand where the market is in the government. You can't market to the entire federal government. So you can, there are ways to gather intelligence to determine where your real opportunities exist. And so I would strongly encourage people to do that, because you don't want to find yourself approved to participate in a program when you meet the eligibility criteria, but you're really not ready to take advantage of the program. And you find yourself 4 years down the road and haven't been able to reap the benefits of program participation. So that's one true lesson learned. And I would encourage anyone who's attempting to apply or thinking about applying to speak with someone who's had that experience, who's been in the program, and get advice in that respect. And I think for those who are in the program, what we find is many of them don't take full advantage of the opportunities that are available, particularly in the business development area. And these are individuals typically who come in the program looking at it as a contracting program and thinking that they can get a lot of contracts and be successful. And it just doesn't really work that way. I think that the whole purpose is to help you build the infrastructure and put the tools in place so that you can be successful. And so I would encourage everyone to take full advantage of the business development opportunities the program offers. And for those who graduate, I mean, the program does offer the opportunity for those individuals to continue to participate by serving as mentors to firms that are starting in a program and coming along. It's a good way to give back, but it's also a good way to continue to have a role in the program and to receive some benefits from their past participation in the program. But I think it's all about sharing and bringing someone along and not forgetting the lessons that they learned when they were in the program.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the things I wanted to know, it is very challenging, especially if you, first off, never started a business or never operated a business, don't know all of the supporting information that's required and make sure that is structured in a way that is, you know, standard and that will be accepted. Are there some webinars or some kind of training materials or, you know, workshops or something like that that are provided by the program to at least get that initiation started?
Yeah, we do have our district offices typically provide orientations and training sessions for individuals who are interested in the program. On our internet, we have training webinars and self-taught training programs. They fall under a category called Government Contracting 101, and that's a very good series of sort of self-taught training courses that will help familiarize with the government marketplace, with the various programs that are available, including the 8A program itself. So I strongly encourage everyone to take advantage of those opportunities. And there will be more of those coming along in terms of webinars and training courses related to the program. And as part of the consulting services that we provide, we provide those types of training seminars as well.
Now, are those particular consulting training seminars, are they online? Are they at particular sites? They're announced at certain locations throughout the year?
They are basically taught at particular sites throughout the year. You can contact your local SBA district office to see if something is scheduled. But those training courses are also converted to webinars and will be found on SBA's website as well.
SBA's website. Mm-hmm.
I'm not certain that they've been posted at this point. They were, most of those were developed last fiscal year.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be in the process of getting those uploaded on the website sometime during this fiscal year, or probably early part of this fiscal year.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that the SBA, you know, has kind of like these little hangouts and YouTube trainings and different things like that. Are some of those also provided through your program?
Yes, they are. And actually, I think you actually spoke with a representative from our public relations department, Tiffany Clements.
Mm-hmm.
And Tiffany is the individual who's actually very active in that area and responsible for the blogs and those sort of social media activities that we have ongoing regularly.
So what exactly is the website? Where can people get connected here?
Yeah, it's www.sba.gov/8abd/.
Okay.
It's www.sba.gov/8ab/.
Okay. So you'd have all of this information for someone who's wanting to actually get in the program. It's a 9-year program. Does anyone ever get disqualified once they've actually been in the program?
Oh, they do. Yes, we have. We actually have several ways a firm can exit the program. One is for cause, and that's essentially that an eligible participant is found to have violated rules and regulations or for some other cause, those firms are terminated from the program, and that can happen at any time during the program participation.
Mm-hmm.
We also have graduation from the program. We have early graduation from the program. And once you come into the program, the first thing that you do is to develop a business plan. And the purpose of that business plan is to plan your firm's growth and development while it's in the program. And annually, that business plan is reviewed, it's updated, and at some point in time, you may achieve or exceed those business plan goals.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And if that occurs, then you have accomplished the purpose of the program. You have essentially achieved what the program set out to do to help you. And when that occurs, then, you know, you are a success. And it's appropriate to early graduate you from the program because you no longer need the benefits of the program to continue your viable business operation. And then, of course, you complete the program after a nine-year period. And after a nine-year period, we will make a determination at that point whether you have actually risen to the level of a graduate from the program or if you are simply completing the nine-year participation term.
Okay. But the goal itself is for them to graduate, to have come to the point where they are standing on their own, they have gone out and they're doing commercial business, or they're able to expand their business into, you know, other arenas, that, and not specifically, you know, totally and solely dependent on, you know, this government, you know, contracting that they're getting through this program.
Now, that's exactly right. The whole purpose of the program is to use this program as a way of complementing what you're doing to grow your business.
So in their business plan, what you're saying is they really should be having a real goal as to what the purpose of the business is, and the purpose of the business is not to do government contracting. It's to have the business to succeed according to the plan or the dream or the vision.
That's exactly right. And when you do that business planning, particularly in the early stages of the program, you know, we recognize that the playing field isn't level. Mm-hmm. And in order for you to start achieving the growth and development that you need to build a sustainable business, there's a need for the opportunity to benefit from the 8A contracting aspect of the program. And so that 8A contracting can be seen as filling that gap, that void of where you would ordinarily be given the level of resources that are available to you and where you are simply because of the circumstances that the program is intended to overcome. Mm-hmm. And once you start achieving that, you know, what you really should be focused on is how you are diversifying and growing in other segments of the market, whether it be commercial, state government, local government, or other federal contracting opportunities that you are obtaining competitively.
Well, I think it's a really good program. We're getting ready to go to break again, and we're going to come back and, you know, delve even deeper into this program and how someone can succeed. So we're going to go to break now, and we'll come back with even more information.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Are you looking for innovative ideas on how to achieve your financial dreams? Tune in to Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday afternoon at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Join certified financial planners Ken Smith and Ethan Broga to learn how you can obtain financial success. You'll be entertained while you discover techniques to alleviate your financial concerns. Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel.
Today's business marketplace is becoming increasingly global thanks to technologies that didn't even exist a few short years ago. Your business might be a startup, or you might be one of the global 500. Either way, you're probably looking at customers and competitors in faraway regions. Listen for Global Reach with host Tay Revez as she brings together experts, ideas, and listeners to help you anywhere in the world. Global Reach is broadcast every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
We're always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Listening to A Sharp Outlook. To reach Angela Sharp or today's guest, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You may also send email to asharpeoutlook@gmail.com or tweet the program at asharpcons. Now, back to the program.
Carol, we've been having a very interesting conversation about the 8A program and all the wonderful things that it can do if someone gets into the program and how it helps to maybe give that business a lift and, that, like I said, that helping hand to become what they dream of, especially if they've been economically or socially disadvantaged. And so this has been very exciting information. One of the things you were really highlighting was the fact that they need to have that business plan. They need to have that information, you know, showing that they're wanting to be a viable business and that their main goal is to do business with the, you know, commercial entities or other entities or to get outside, you know, of the government itself. One of the things I want to ask is, because this could end up being a problem for a small business, if they are actually contracting with the government, how quickly do they get paid for their services?
Well, the government is paying very promptly. If you will recall, under this administration, the president made a special effort to direct agencies to pay very quickly under the 30 days under the Prompt Pay Act, directing agencies to pay quicker. So the whole purpose there is a recognition of the impact that these contracts have on the cash flow requirements of a small business, and ensuring that while we're helping them, we're not also hurting them by creating, you know, financial situations for them that they can't manage. So, you know, it's just get the money to them as quickly as we possibly can. Now, a lot of that also is incumbent upon the vendor or the small business firm itself to make sure that, you know, its documents are in order when it submits an invoice or a request for reimbursement, so that those actions can be handled properly by the contracting officials in the various agencies.
Now, if there is a situation where maybe their payment is going to be longer and they're wanting to go out and possibly get a line of credit, and because they've been disadvantaged, maybe they don't have the history, they need to get some type of guarantee. Can they be in this program and also actually have like a guaranteed loan through the SBA?
They certainly can. And as a matter of fact, we've had some recent changes to our lending programs geared directly at facilitating meeting the needs of small businesses particularly in respect to lines of credit and receivable financing. And that was an area where some of our programs needed to be tweaked. There were some changes that were made in the past fiscal year to make those programs more accessible and work better for small businesses that are in need of working capital and short-term financing or receivable financing needs. So that, that's basically kind of the total package. Any service or program that's available at SBA is available to anyone who is a participant in the 8A program. So there are you're not precluded in any way in participating in those opportunities as well.
Oh, wonderful. One of the things I was curious, and it may even be in another department of the federal government, when we're talking about economically disadvantaged, does any type of like location, like rural areas, like farmers in a rural area, are they able to participate in this particular program to be able to do some type of contracting with the government?
Yeah, well, they would not necessarily be eligible to participate in the 8A program simply because of a geographic location.
Okay.
However, we do have a program that's referred to as the Hub Zone program. It's the Historically Underutilized Business Zone program. And that program is a contracting program, and the purpose of that program is to provide sort of a hand up, so to speak, to firms that are located in what we refer to as Hub Zones. And Hub Zones are areas of high unemployment, high underemployment, where there's a high concentration of individuals who are at in terms of low income areas. It could be And hub zones are basically identified based on the census in terms of, you know, those medium income factors and the employment factors. It comes out, I think it's every 5 years or so that census thing comes out, and then it's updated periodically. And those tracks are identified, and if your firm is located in one of those tracks, and you are employing 35% of your workforce with individuals who are residents of a hub zone, it doesn't necessarily have to be that hub zone, then that firm is, and the company is small and it's owned by a U.S. citizen, then that firm may possibly be eligible to participate in the hub zone program. And under the hub zone program, federal contracting officers have the ability to set aside contracts that are restricted to competition for hub zone-owned companies. And there's a federal goal in terms of annual spending for hub zone companies of 3% of the total federal budget. Now, of course, you know, the federal budget is what we consider to be the eligible small business budget. It generally is around $420 billion a year. I'm sorry. And out of that, you know, the goal for the government-wide goal is 3% for hub zone-owned companies. And that's another thriving program, particularly one where we're anxiously recruiting for more participation in that program as well.
One of the things I want to make clear to the listeners so there's no misunderstanding, when they get into this program and they have, you know, at the point where they're actually doing business with the federal government, the contracts that they're going after or the services or they're, you know, trying to do business, it's still on a competitive basis, is it not?
On for the hub zone program, yes, it's still a competitive basis. But generally, if they're set aside for hub zone firms, then they're competing against other hub zone companies.
Okay. And even for the 8A programs, when they're getting into that program and they're providing services, is that not also on a competitive basis?
Well, it can be if it's a hub zone, if it's a contract that is designated as an 8A contract,
mm-hmm.
it's either a sole source under the 8A program or it is a competitive contract limited to 8A competition. Under the rules, if a contract is for services or construction, and the value of that contract is estimated to be $4 million or less, it's a sole source contract. If the value of that contract exceeds $4 million, the aggregate value, as estimated by the government over the life of the contract, exceeds $4 million, then it's a contract that will be competed among 8A companies. If it's that same rule applies to contracts that are manufacturing, that threshold is $6.5 million. So if the contract for manufacturing is $6.5 million or under, then it's done on a sole source basis generally. If it's above $6.5 million, then it's done on a competition basis only among other 8A companies.
Now, is there a way where they can actually do kind of like a joint venture or something where there is more than one 8A business that is applying so they can, you know, be a part of that particular contract?
Yeah, they can do joint
ventures.
They can do
not able to handle, but they can combine with other 8A.
Right, they can combine with other 8A companies. They can combine with other small businesses. And under the 8A program, we have one of our business development initiatives under the 8A program is our Mentor Protege program. And under that program, we will allow a joint venture, an 8A joint venture with the mentor. And, of course, the mentor could be another small business, it could be a graduated 8A company, or it could be a large business.
Mm-hmm.
And we will allow a joint venture under the Mentor Protege program without consideration of affiliation, and that becomes an issue in terms of whether the contract is actually going to a small business or a large business. And under the Mentor Protege program, if your protege is a large business, we will allow you to joint venture with that large business and not affiliate you for size purposes.
Mm-hmm.
There are specific rules around how that joint venture has to be structured and how it has to be performed,
mm-hmm.
but we will allow for that.
Okay. And so this is generally for your larger, you know, contracts that are out there, So, in fact, you would be joining up with someone that is a prime contractor. The 8A business would actually be like the subcontractor?
No, the 8A business has to be the prime contractor.
Oh, it does?
Yeah, the 8A company has to be the lead company, and they have to be the company that is actually in charge of running the project. And in order for it to be an 8A contract, we have to award that firm, that contract, based on the eligibility of that 8A firm.
Okay.
So, yes, that's, but it's a great opportunity, but we use joint ventures not for the purpose of necessarily performing a larger contract, although a lot of times the joint ventures are for contracts that are much larger. But we use the joint venture as a way of providing business development assistance to the 8A firm. So in order for that joint venture to be eligible joint venture, it has to be based on the fact that the 8A firm needs assistance in certain areas to be able to move up to perform contracts of that type and complexity. Mm-hmm. So there have to be identified shortcomings in respect to that firm that can be addressed by their joint venture partner. So the whole purpose is for the joint venture partner to be able to assist this firm to develop and obtain the skills and whatever resources may be necessary so the next time they could perform their contract themselves.
Interesting. That's really good information. So what other things maybe you want to share about the program that we haven't discussed at this time that they may need to know so that they're able to be successful? Like you said, you know, the main thing is to have a good, strong business plan, to have a good budget, you know, to have, you know, your marketing plan, your advertising, who you're trying to reach, what you're trying to sell, what is that passion that you're trying to put forward. But what are some other, you know, ideas that, or tips that you could give them?
Well, I would say that, and I go back to the point I made earlier about assessing your company in terms of really being ready to come into the federal marketplace. Do you have the type of past performance that will make your company attractive to a federal buyer? And, you know, everybody looks at the idea that I can get a sole source contract. Well, yeah, but it's really competitive. You may not believe it, but that sole source contract is competitive because you're not the only 8A firm that's pursuing that sole mm-hmm. source contract, mm-hmm. number one. And, you know, whether or not you have the ability to get it or not is going to depend largely on your past performance versus the other 8A companies that are also pursuing that, as well as the government has an estimate. The government, before they put a contract out or before they even start talking about a contract, they develop an independent government estimate. So in addition, you're competing against that independent government estimate, whether you realize it or not. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's something that's important to keep in mind. But the other thing to keep in mind is that, you know, when you start looking at whether you're ready or not, you have to also look at the federal acquisition environment as it is today. You know, there are a number of complex contracting vehicles, there are a number of complex rules and regulations, and the people that you're dealing with, the people you're negotiating with across the table, they know those rules and they know how they work. Mm-hmm. They know, and so it's important for you to understand how the government works and what your rights are and what it is that you're really getting into when you sign a federal contract. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, you should do your research. You should do your due diligence. I mean, you can go to the Federal Procurement Data System. It's online. It's called FPDS. And that system archives records of who buys what every year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you can go in, you can identify your industry, and you can see what agencies are buying the services and products that you're selling, how frequently they buy them, where they buy them, you know, what are the average prices of the contracts? You know, who are the firms that are getting these contracts? So you get a sense of who your competitors are.
Right.
You understand, you know, where your market is. So you're not wasting your resources trying to find your market. You can identify it. You can narrow it down to the areas that you want to focus on, the ones that you want to market to. And it's
so
all about marketing. It's all about being visible. It's all about making yourself known, your company known, and its capabilities known. You know, become familiar with the agencies that you identify that you want to do business with. Find out who their small business representatives are. Introduce yourself. You know, go in and talk about your capabilities. And don't go in with the notion that, hey, I'm an 8A firm, so I need a contract.
Right.
You know, you
so
go
in words,
with the notion that I'm a small business. These are my capabilities, and this is what I can do for you. And, oh, by the way, if it helps expedite your acquisition process, I'm 8A.
So, in other words, you're trying to tell everyone do your homework in advance.
Exactly.
Cheryl, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. I know this is valuable information for all of our listeners. And be sure and check out those websites. Do your homework so that you can participate in this valuable program. We want to thank everyone for listening. And tune in next week, because next week we're going to be talking about business processes, and we're going to get involved in accounting processes, operating processes, and all the things you need to know so that your particular business is going to function and operate successfully. Thank you for listening in, and tune in again next week.
And thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you again for tuning into A Sharp Outlook. Please join your host, Angela Sharp, next Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Tune in again next week.